This is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. As the Supreme Court mulls the fate of gerrymandering, another public institution continues its role in shaping elections to come. On April 1st, 2020, the Census Bureau will embark on its decennial mission to count every person in America and shifts in the population so that the number of electoral college votes and congressional seats can be adjusted accordingly. But as the Bureau reminds us every decade, census data are not just about politics.
We have made the census much more than a gathering of statistics. Wherever we are, whatever we want to become, it can help us all, in Lincoln's words, to better judge what to do and how to do it.
Free and open census data fueled journalism and academic research. They helped businesses decide where to build grocery stores, where local governments put new schools and roads. Of course, collecting this massive data trove is a huge and costly endeavor, undertaken in large part by hundreds of thousands of census takers going door to door, a sometimes naughty enterprise spoofed by Saturday Night Live in 2000.
How many people live in this residence?
Oh, boy. That's a good question. I'm bad with numbers. Maybe 80.
80 people live in this apartment?
Seems high, doesn't it? Not 80. How about 4?
But an overcount is not what should concern us. An undercount is far more likely, especially amid a series of recent shakeups at the Bureau.
The director of the U.S. Census Bureau is resigning. John Thompson will leave on June 30th. This comes as the agency is in a funding crisis.
In the 2017 fiscal year, Congress approved almost $1.5 billion for the Bureau, and that's about 10% below what was requested. In the proposed budget for 2018, another $1.5 billion was earmarked, but experts say that that falls far below what is needed.
And Kenneth Pruitt, who served as census director from 1998 to 2001, says that the repercussions from an underfunded, leaderless, and crippled census will cascade far and wide. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Politico called the U.S. Census the largest civic action undertaken by the entire country, enshrined in the Constitution that aims to count every person living in the United States, regardless of race, gender, or citizenship status. At least, it writes, that has been its intent since James Madison helped design the first census in 1790. So, why is it so crucial?
We would not have a representative democracy. How would you know how many seats each state would get? Every 10 years, we reapportion the Congress proportionate to population size, as the Constitution declared. Secondly, once you have these numbers, maybe you can learn something about the society, which would allow you to govern it better.
It also plays a pretty big financial role. I mean, it determines how billions of dollars are funneled to states for schools or roads or anything, right?
Exactly. About $4 billion currently are in direct funding. However, many, 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 many more dollars are funded indirectly because of the census counts from Bureau of Labor Statistics, Health and Human Services, Department of Transport. All of these use census data for their own program activities.
Staying with history for a moment, nowadays we're all familiar with the idea that big data can be weaponized, but there's an early example towards the end of the Civil War. That's when General William Sherman used the 1860 census data to plan part of his infamous March to the Sea.
He needed to find out where the crops were. He had to feed this vast moving army.
Far away from Union supply lines. No food.
Absolutely, no food. They really were frightened of going down there not finding food. And what happened, fascinating, they actually got together some maps and superimposed the census data from 1860 on the maps. And he knew exactly where he was going, what he would run into, roughly how many people ought to be in that area.
So it's worth noting that the census, which is supposed to be scientific and nonpartisan, is often swept up into political anxiety.
The 1920 census showed that we were more urban than rural. And if you go back in your mind to the 1920s, this was the moment of the Red Scare.
The first Red Scare.
The first Red Scare, exactly. And so the conservative Congress, still very rural in its origins, simply said, we're not going to reapportion. We're not going to give all those seats to these radical city-dwelling immigrants.
Congress refused to use it?
Yeah, they just stonewalled for a decade, and we didn't reapportion until 1930.
Didn't they say that the information must be flawed?
Well, yes, that was their excuse. There was actually no rationale for that. They were fairly certain we were still a majority rural nation. It has echoes today, because today there are many people saying we are losing our country because the whites are going to be a minority.
Last month, the Census Bureau's director, John Thompson, announced that he would resign. He'll be gone by the end of the month. As the Bureau ramps up to 2020, it doesn't have a manager, and it seems to have insufficient funding. How will that affect things?
Hugely. This is the moment of ramp-up time. Most critically, we do an end-to-end test of the census. That is, you actually run the census as if it's actually happening about 3 years before you actually do a census. It was going to be in four parts of the country, so you'd have a good overview, an Indian reservation, rural area, urban area, and so forth. It is now planned for only one area, Rhode Island. They have to start getting their ads ready, testing them in half a dozen different languages. And it is not going to do an end-to-end test of the partnership strategy. These are the trusted voices that talk people into cooperating with a census they may not otherwise want to do.
You mean like Tom Hanks?
Tom Hanks, exactly. Or the Catholic Church, for example, very, very active in the Southwest with respect to migrant workers, especially if they're undocumented. This is the year they have to get ready to do all of that. And they're flat-funded.
There was a draft executive order leaked in January that proposed the director of the Census Bureau include questions to determine U.S. citizenship and immigration status, thus scaring many people away from the census. The executive order hasn't been signed, but the idea has many groups up in arms. There were some ads in recent counts that have sought to reassure people in immigrant communities that filling out census forms wouldn't endanger them. They had posters in bodegas and unemployment offices. So as far as ads go, when we've spent so much money and time trying to convince people that they won't be endangered if they fill out the survey, do you think having that executive order signed could undo a lot of work?
Oh, absolutely. But I think some part of that will happen without the executive order. I think that will aggravate it. There's a huge mistrust out here right now toward the government. I am very fearful that we will have a bad census, even if there's no attempt to make it a bad census, though I can make an argument for why that may make sense for some interest groups.
Make an argument.
The Republican Party has done a very, very good job of converting roughly 50% of its voter strength to roughly 60-65% of its legislative strength and gubernatorial strength. It's done that through gerrymandering. I would point out that if you only start 50-50, they can't keep growing it. You may get 60-40 or even 65-35. You're not going to get 80-20. The numbers simply won't work out. So they're right now at the peak of what they can extract from the census. They've done it very intelligently and cleverly by voter suppression and by gerrymandering.
So you're saying if they could freeze this last census in amber, they'd be happy?
You are absolutely right. They cannot improve and they can lose. So a bad census could lead you to make the argument, we shouldn't reapportion like we didn't reapportion in 1920 because we had a flawed census. And if enough state legislators and governors make that case, they'll be able to do it.
So what's really at stake if you undercount a population during the census?
All major surveys that are done with any kind of scientific rigor whatsoever are standardized to the census data. Therefore, if the census data are flawed, if they have a big undercount, everything else replicates that undercount. Our unemployment numbers, our health numbers, our transportation numbers, our housing numbers, every other major piece of statistical work using sample surveys is necessarily flawed to the degree to which the census is flawed. So that's a huge cost to the society if you want to make public policy based on numbers.
In addition to the knock-on effects of bad data, what else is at stake?
Let us say that the sense of the country is this was a bad, poorly done census. Sooner or later, we feed the numbers back to cities and counties and the mayors, pour over these data and say, wait a minute, there are more kids in our school system than you counted. This doesn't look like our transportation system that you've counted. This isn't a good count. That then can go viral. Here's one of the consequences of that for me that frightens me, I must say. If it's a failed census, why don't we privatize it? Give it to Google, Apple, Microsoft, whatever, and turn it into a commercial operation where people will do it well because they're getting paid to do it well.
What bugs you about privatization of the census? I mean, it's worked so well in the military and education and our prison system.
Some of that's a matter of judgment. No, let us say, of course, it can work. I think some things are a public good, and I think widely shared, high-quality statistics are a public good. And I'm happy to contract out. We wrote a huge contract to Lockheed in 2000, and we benefited enormously from their talent.
What were they doing?
They were doing the data capture, intelligent character recognition and so forth, very advanced work.
Sounds fancy.
No, it was very well done. But as soon as you privatize something, you necessarily have to build in a profit. If you're trying to make money off of this, you think differently than if you're a public good institution. And it's in the Constitution right from the beginning. We would not have representative democracy without the census. I would like it to be a public good.
Is it too late to save the 2020 census?
It is not too late. But I'm not optimistic because, one, leadership really matters, and I don't see rapid movement on finding a new director, and budget matters, and I don't see any rapid movement. I see the opposite. But can it be fixed? Absolutely. 3 years is long enough if you have enough money and you have the right leadership.
What about the pressure of mayors on congressional representatives?
That will begin to build. They want the data. They need the data to govern. There's a reason we open up 435 census offices, by the way, because every member of Congress likes to know about his own district or her own district. But we're on a new landscape. It's a mystery to me how we will govern ourselves or think about ourselves. We simply don't have a good handle on the degree to which you can lose confidence in the numbers of an advanced democracy. We've never governed it as if we did not believe in numbers.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Dr. Kenneth Pruitt is the author of What is Your Race? The Census and Our Flawed Efforts to Classify Americans. And he served as the director of the Census Bureau from 1998 to 2001.